It's Sunday morning, so you know what that means.
It's time to remind you it's Saturday morning, Brad.
Okay. All right, fine. Otherwise, it's known as time for the Sucks podcast. Good morning. I'm your host, Brad.
And I am your host, Dave.
I'm producer Joe.
Well, this is a podcast where three friends / dummies talk about design, intentional and otherwise, and all the ways that UX,
user experience design,
impact us all every day. And we are lovers, not experts. We started this podcast as a way to talk about why things were made the way they are.
And where those design decisions might have gone off the rails.
Indeed. How are y'all doing? It's a little early. I think we're a little sluggish this morning. How are y'all feeling?
Well, I'll tell you what. I'm a little meh on our topic today. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the main things we'll get into about the experience of voting. I think it's a little bit overwhelming. I think it's oblique in its design, and it just kind of gives you this exhaustion, which may or may not be the way it was designed to be.
So keep listening, users, because this is going to be fun.
Hopefully it will. Hopefully it will. Hopefully I am, we can overcome some of this voter fatigue.
Maybe that should go into our solutions. You know, as our listeners know, we have this whole script, including what I'm saying right now, documented word for word. But maybe we should add a section to make voting fun. Maybe there should be clowns or balloons, or I don't actually know how to have fun anymore.
Churros. It's got to be churros. Yeah.
Please give me a churro rides, the whole thing. Cast my ballot. Yes.
Thematically, I think this is great because I think a lot of people feel the way that producer Joe feels.
Yeah.
Totally. So good times. I do notice in the script, though, that somebody wrote, not SATC, bold, large font. And I just assume that means not Sex in the City. And damn you guys, who wrote that? Why would you write that?
Well, even though it says not Sex in the City in the script, ostensibly, let's talk about Sex in the City. Because I did see that I think they wrapped season 2 filming.
Ooh, okay.
So it's coming.
All right. And this is the part where Brad pretends that he's interested, even though he showed his true colors a few weeks ago and broke my heart.
I know. I mean, look, again, I think it's a good show.
Yeah.
It's just not my show.
And I understand, Brad. I understand. Show. I understand. Well,
anyway, I have heard nothing about Kim Cattrall in season 2. So that continues.
Boo. Boo. Well, what can
we just
do?
Keep talking about free churros? That's
free churros it is.
What kind of churros do you guys like? I've been chasing like this this ideal churro that I had one time in my life for the
I'm gonna stop you right
years.
There. I'm gonna stop you right there. Okay. Because there are certain things, Brad, that are pure. Okay? Cheesecake, pure. I know. people are gonna disagree with me. Churros, pure. When they stuff crap in them, it's just ruined. Like the churro is amazing the way it is. Cheesecake is amazing the way it is. Why do we have to add more things to these things? This is like so American.
Joe, what's your take on churros?
I think I'm a little bit with Dave. I think just the plain fried with sugar, good enough. It's kind of like, and it's almost as pure as just like regular funnel cake, which is basically fried dough with sugar.
Yeah.
You don't have to put anything on here. You don't have to add fruit to it. You don't have to.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Same thing, Joe.
Well, I'm with you there. Cake. Like they have like fruity pebbles churros and all that stuff. Red velvet. Like I don't care for any of that noise. However, the perfect churro that I had was in Spain 20 years ago or more, and it was a pure churro, like fried cinnamon sugar, yada yada. However, it came with this little saucer of this dipping chocolate, which was ultra thick, like dark, rich, thick, like you could. Put the cup upside down and it wouldn't fall out.
Wow.
Kind of thing. And you dip in that. And like,
that's fine.
I've been chasing that ever since, man.
Dipping is fine. Dipping is fine. Just don't put anything in it.
Okay.
Well, I'll stuff my churro.
Then you have control over it. It's kind of like salad dressing on the side.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
No, I'm not big on salad dressing either.
What?
And that's our episode. We're wishing you all a great user experience. Blah, blah, blah.
No. You're not big on salad dressing? Is that a bit? You're just saying that? Or you eat salad dry? Because who are you? Like, who does that?
You know, a little oil and vinegar. A pinch of salt.
Okay. Fair.
Yeah, that's what I got
the gloopy salad dressing.
No, mayonnaise based. No, it's got to be like a vinaigrette of some sort or what have you. Yeah. Anyway, do you know what churros are, guys?
Cool shit. Old people telling you what's cool.
Wow, you got a little frog in your throat there, Brad.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty early.
Yeah. We should jump into the cool shit.
All right.
It's the cool shit. It's the cool shit. It's the cool shit.
It's old people telling you what's cool.
Joe, Okay. Take us away. What kind of cool shit do you come up with this week?
Well, I'm not an oncologist, but there was some studies done about bee venom.
Wait. You're not an oncologist? Effective.
No.
Well, damn
that's
it, Joe.
Why I'm here.
Why did we have that appointment last week?
That was a different type of exam, Dave. So the research is that bee venom, specifically a compound in bee venom called melatonin, not melatonin, not melanin, melatonin,
okay,
is effective at breaking down cancer cell walls. And this can do one of two things. It helps prevent cancer from replicating. It can also make current chemotherapy treatments more effective because it can enter the cell body better, so you can use less of it and therefore avoid more harmful side effects and, you know, lower cost. Mm-hmm. But there's like hope that this could almost be like a panacea for all types of cancers, because it seems to attack cancer cells specifically, but not healthy cells. So obviously there's a lot more research to be done, but it's definitely on the path to being pretty cool.
That is really cool shit. And ever since you brought this up, I've been going around looking for hives of bees, and I've been insulting them, trying to get them to sting me because I don't want any cancer, of course.
Yeah, that's a good.
I've been coming up with some like killer burns on these bees.
Yeah, give us one, Brad. This is a perfect time for a bee joke,
right?
If you didn't come prepared with a bee joke, I hate you. I hate you if there's no bee joke in you, Brad. Hey, you know what? You could say, "Hey, what would bears be without bees?" Just ears. Yeah.
So you're looking up bee jokes?
I'm just coming up with these off the top of my head. Why did the bee go to the dermatologist? It had hives. Mm-hmm. Wait, one more. What do bees like with their sushi? Wasabi.
Bee. Wasabi? Oh, no. That doesn't even track.
I know. All right. Let's keep going here. Okay, Brad, what do you got? What do you got?
That was Joe's. That was terrible. Let's start again. It's Sunday morning. Wait.
Come on. Cool shit. What do you got?
Okay. Here's what I've got. I've got the NASA DART spacecraft. You guys, have you heard of this?
Yes. That was in the news. Good stuff. Cool stuff.
Yeah, man. There's an asteroid. They wanted to run a test to see if a spacecraft, an explosive, you know, projected into the asteroid can alter its course and then thus save us all from a mass level of extinction level event. So I think that's super cool. So here's what I know. The test was successful in the fact that the actual spacecraft did make contact with the asteroid. But what I haven't heard yet is if it had a meaningful impact on its trajectory. You know, have you guys seen this? Because I was looking to see if there's any updates. Because when they announced this, when it was in the news earlier this week, you know, they still need to look at the data. And I haven't seen any further data. I know that there's like this huge debris trail from, you know, the impact. But I don't know if like it was effective in saving us all from, you know, death.
Oh, we're going to find out by Wednesday, Brad.
This is going to be the last episode of the Sucks Podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to have to see you guys. So,
and I don't mean because of the asteroid. I mean because this is not going well.
I think this is great. I don't know about you, Brad. We've talked about churros. We've got bee puns. And we've got deep impact on an asteroid. What else do users want?
I don't know. We did cover Sex in the City a little bit, too.
Boom.
Well, all right. Let's take a quick break and pay some bills. And maybe we can regain focus when we come back with our main topic, which is voting. And we are back with our main topic today, guys. Big episode. Don't you love it when I say that, Dave? We're talking about the design of voting. A big episode that we were meant to thoroughly research, and we did some research. But we do have quite a lot to talk about. Fair.
And you know what? Yeah. You know, I'm probably the most politico out of all of us here. I mean, we all are. So I think I'll know a little bit. There's a lot of research I've done years and decades before the episode. As
so
we all
Dave, out of the three of us, has been probably the biggest advocate in voting and canvassing and polling and political advocacy for sure. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, Dave has some bona fides on the Obama campaign where he was like legit working.
I was a delegate. I was a delegate for my district. Yep. I went to the
tell us what that was.
So a delegate you have to be elected to. Okay, so I worked on the campaign. I mean, not a big role, a small regional role. We opened up an office in Santa Ana. Yeah. So that was fun, opening up a campaign office, like a little satellite office. And then, you know, they wanted – I don't know if anybody remembers that election.
I do, a bit.
Well, there might be some Gen Zers tuning in. I mean, I know there are, you know.
Yes.
We're very popular out there with the Gen Zs. at that time, like, you know, they were worried that, like, Hillary Clinton was going to, like, poach – you know, try to steal electors or and then use the super electors. I don't know.
Fake so, electors.
Yeah. So the or delegates rather. Okay, so, you know, I had to campaign for this. Right. And it's pretty cool. Like I never campaigned or won anything in my life. So this was fun.
Yeah.
I think I won concert tickets one time on the radio. That's it. That's the only other thing. But you go and you you go and you give a speech. I did some robocalls, right? I had a list that I was like, I made it a bit. I was like, I hate robocalls. I get it, but listen to me. You know, come and vote for me because I won't give away your vote to Hillary.
I'd listen.
But anyway, I gave a speech and then, yeah, I won. And it's funny, guys, because I'm not used to winning. And I saw the guy I beat, the kid, and he was much younger than me. And he looked so devastated. That just burned into my brain now all the time. Like how sad he looked.
But, your participation trophy, kid.
Yeah, but I had a great time, and we went to the convention. It was historic. It was fantastic. It was a lot of fun. But yeah, it's a lot of work. We did a lot on the campaign. A lot of calling. You guys have done calling with me.
Sure.
During last election, we made a bunch of phone calls.
And Trump still lost, even with our efforts.
Funny. Yeah, so we've all been involved to a various degree. You know, don't sell yourselves short. But yeah, so that's interesting you bring that up, Brad. And I don't want to throw the script off here, but one of the things we're not talking about is engagement beyond voting. Like that's not what this episode is about.
True.
But that's a whole other part of democracy. If this episode was democracy, big D democracy,
right?
That is something we would totally discuss.
And maybe that's season three. We can just do a whole segment about democracy. Wow. Too big for one episode.
Yeah, sure. we'll totally do lots of research for that one.
Yeah, just like this episode. But yeah, so that's cool. So you were actually elected. So you went through this process.
I was elected.
You were elected as a delegate.
Sir.
A delegate. Okay, got it.
Okay, cool. So a delegate. Yeah, and just so you know, a delegate actually votes for the candidate. You don't. It's not direct election. It's not a direct democracy voting. You vote for people who then vote for the person. So technically, I had tens of thousands of people's votes in my hands. I could have said, I'm going to vote for Hillary Clinton. But they don't really give you that opportunity. It's like they just go, hey, let's see the A's. And then everybody raises their hand. They're like, yay. And then they're like, yay. And that's it.
So it's like, yays?
Yeah, A's. Wow. A's. The A's have it. Yeah. The A's have it. Whatever.
Oh.
The eyes have it, I should say.
Okay, thank you.
I would have had to go. Sorry.
I thought like, yay! Like Kermit the Frog.
That was the joke. But then I forgot what the real thing is. Yeah, it's eyes. The eyes have it.
Yeah.
And I was going to, I mean, you'd have to go out of your way to vote against that. I mean, like you'd have to be a dick. You'd have to have a movement, basically. I'd have to talk like to 15 others and we'd have to like formally say, no, we're not voting for this candidate.
But not to get off track, but
we
it's
are.
Possible. Like what you described is possible.
It is. It is, and that's what they're worried about. And that,
This was for the primaries or the general?
For the primary.
Because you guys, obviously, you're talking about Obama versus Hillary. So I just want to be clear on that.
Yeah.
And you know, users and listeners of this podcast will know kind of which way the three of us lean. However, we're not trying to make this partisan at all.
Absolutely not.
About the experience of voting, the design of the ballots. So, you know, if you're not aligned with our political thinking, I hope you're not turned off by this topic. I think it's a good one. And we're not going to get into politics. We're going to get into the design of voting.
It may be impossible not to at some points.
Right.
But we'll behave. Right. Maybe we should define the user requirements.
That's a good idea.
On track. Define user requirements of voting. We're going to take a little bit more of a product design and UX design, you know, core methodology here and kind of break this down. Define user requirements. Here's what I've written for our discussion. As a citizen, I want to ensure my voice is reflected in government. And then I have below that as a sub bullet. The real reason, though, as a citizen, I want to influence social impact. I don't want the negative effects of candidates and laws that are contrary to my values to ultimately go into law.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And then finally, sort of a tertiary user requirement. Ooh. As a citizen, I have a civic duty to vote, which is altruistic. I put this as tertiary because I don't actually believe that this is the primary motivator for why people are voting. Altruism right. is important, and I think it is
for some people. Duty,
but I don't think it's the number one reason that people vote.
Right. I don't know. For some people.
I could be wrong.
Some people, Brad. Yeah, personas right. here next. What the fuck is this? What are you doing? Like, nobody is. This is very very user UX heavy this time, huh? You're getting you at work.
UXy.
It's very UXy.
You sexy.
You sexy. No. UXy. Look at that.
We're faking our way through this.
Yeah, tell us what a persona is, real fast.
Okay, Brad. It's archetypes of people who are actually using a system or a product, right?
Yeah.
So it's the literal archetype types of examples of real people. Like these are not real people who we're going to discuss, but that's, you kind of want to have like a baseline of who you're designing for. So we've broken it down. We've got like, you know, five personas here.
Well, back up, but talk about how you do that. Like, you interview a lot of people. This comes in the user research portion, right? And then you get like a type, which is always kind of weird when I'm studying this, because I was like, sounds like a stereotype. Like, it sounds like you're boiling people, yeah. all these various people down to a stereotype. I don't know.
I think it's
but,
true.
But yeah, so you're just trying to get a type so you know, like, oh, this guy's a miner who works in the mines and is 50 years old. And there's a lot of these folks like this and they have certain right. interests, right? That's the idea of a persona.
Yes, and you don't want to like have too limited of personas, you know, because if you're only designing for us, then you're not representing the full spectrum, right? So you have to have an understanding of the full landscape of who you're building for. So let's take these one by one. Do you want to take the first one?
Yeah, let's go round robin. You do the prime. You set us up prime and sub, and then we'll get into the peoples.
Okay, prime persona: all UETA citizens over the age of 18, with some restrictions for felons.
Okay,
and personas, and then we have some use cases here.
Okay, I'll read Denise. Denise is a single working mother who needs to pick up her 3-year-old daughter at daycare center before going to the poll to vote. The child is quite active and tends to wander off in public places. Denise will have to hold her in her arms while she is voting. Voting feels rushed, quite like a chore.
Paul is a divorced steelworker who is distrustful of elections in general. He gets his news from social media. He feels disenfranchised that his vote will not be counted. He feels more and more that the system is rigged. He votes in person as he feels it's the safest.
Claire is a college student with 2 part-time jobs. She doesn't feel that she has the time to vote and doesn't feel that the electoral system will really help her in her day-to-day life. She will vote if there's a candidate she really likes and if she can find the time.
Min Jun has vision loss, including being colorblind. As a recent immigrant to the U.S., English is Min Jun's second language. Although he can remember who the candidates are from seeing them on TV, he has problems reading their names.
And finally, George is a retiree who has MS that affects his memory and his mobility. He uses a cane and can't stand for long periods at a time. Because of his memory problems, he needs to bring notes with him to the polling station about how he is going to vote. He's very concerned about voting privacy. He misses the privacy of the old designs with the curtain.
Personas. Right. So, I mean, as you can see, like, there are some like logistical considerations here. You've got what's her name? Claire? No, Denise, who's literally holding a kid in her arm while she has to vote with one hand. Mm-hmm. You've got other people with mobility issues. You've got other people with language barriers. So you got to design for all these people to be representative. Very, very tough design challenge.
Yeah, yeah. And good work doing all that research, interviewing all those people, Brad.
Yeah, I want to give a big shout out to George, Paul, Claire, Minjun, Denise for taking their time out of their busy schedules.
Did you say schedules?
Schedules.
Oh, boy. I can't tell if you really say it that way or if that was a little bit.
Yeah, well, I'll never tell. And then we go into our user journey.
Let's do it.
Let's go into our user journey. This is based on us living in Los Angeles. So here's what I wrote down. I'm just going to read through this briefly. Starting with, I made a decision to register to vote online or at the DMV, and I may choose a political party. Of course, I can choose. That's optional. Sometimes, months prior to elections, I begin to see political ads on television with increasing frequency. Cable news spends pre-election time on potential candidates. All this is influencing my headspace. Mm-hmm. I receive an official sample ballot and a voter guide in the mail. I may choose to check trusted sources like newspapers for their voting guides and their recommendations. I decide either to vote by mail or in person. And I added a caveat here because this is my particular use case, that families may fill out their mail-in ballots together based on our shared beliefs. So my wife and I will literally do this with our ballots. Yep. We'll sit at the dining room table and we'll go through it and we'll debate if we are not, you know, sold. And we don't always vote the same, but, you know, often we're pretty damn close. I return my ballot by mail and wonder later if I remembered to sign it. Or I go to a local polling place. For me, it's a retirement home a few blocks away. Or drop boxes.
Yes, I love drop boxes. Right? They're a fairly recent addition to the voting process, at least here in California. I don't know if they're everywhere. Love them. They're just so convenient.
Yeah. Controversial, right? Because
not really to some people who have small brains.
Watch yourself, counselor.
I'm already misbehaving. I mean, come on. It's a fucking, instead of like, they've taken away all the mailboxes, thanks to Joy, whatever his name is. And it's like, it's, this to me is a secure place. It's like right next to a library or right next to like a post office. And it's like, well, it wouldn't be in, right by a post office, but it makes it easy and go, okay, no one's going to open this box and take it away. It's cemented. It's in the ground.
Yeah.
I love them. I think everywhere should have them.
For sure. I think that the counter argument is around security, but I will tell you, and what? I'm sorry to play our hand here, but I cannot find any evidence that they've ever been abused.
How can you abuse them? Have you seen them? You would have to go in there and like take it out of the ground, like get a big wrench, right? One of those industrial wrenches, and then lift the box up and then get a chainsaw to cut into it. It's ridiculous. Anyway,
I will acknowledge that some people have very serious concerns about voting security based on stuff like drop boxes or mail-in ballots and all that stuff. Yeah. And then I will also acknowledge that there does not seem to be any credible evidence that this is a problem.
Absolutely. Right? Absolutely. So, well, let's talk about friction. All right.
Okay.
A little bit of user friction in voting. Yeah, absolutely. It leads right into it.
Yeah. And by the way, before we jump into the script, Dave, Joe, you highlighted something that is friction that is not in the script, and that's lack of consistency. So lack of consistency nationwide about like your voting options, you know, because it is state by state or county by county. I would say that's potential friction.
Yeah, absolutely.
Even just the process, like some, even with primaries, like some states have primaries, others caucus.
Is it like three caucus states? Two? How many are there?
But some states are open primaries, some are closed primaries. We get into all of that, but
are we allowed to say the word caucus?
Yeah.
Oh, I was just wondering. I mean, can we? Are we legally allowed to say the word caucus?
Yeah. This is a PG-13. It's a PG-13, bro. Okay. Brad. All right. So what else is friction? We've got time. Okay. Let's talk about this, Brad. Time. In person, vote by mail, online, ? We'll discuss. And early voting. Time is a big issue. You seem like you have a lot of time to make decisions, and then you run out of it. What's the next one?
Well, let's jump into time in a little bit more detail.
Okay.
A lot of the solutions to expand voting take time into account. So, you know, mail-in voting, online voting, early voting, all these, we do not have political consensus that these are good ideas.
Which is crazy to me, too. It's really, like, if you are an American and you love democracy, like, why? I think the lie, the big lie has been sold so well to people that there's so much corruption. And the irony is taking votes away from people is the corruption, is the thing you should be upset about. Like, the thing that they're thinking is happening, by them thinking that happening, they're making it happen. You know what I mean? Like, oh my God.
It's self-fulfilling prophecy. Yeah, sure.
Right. It's like, you know,
Well, I was going to say, here's the other problem with time. If I go to a polling place, I work from 9 to 5 and it's only open from 7 to 6. That means I've got to be there in line super early and hope that I get to the vote, to the actual ballot box before I have to get to work, or I have to get there before it closes after work. That's why, like, early voting extends that period of time when you can vote. So taking that away is literally taking votes away. That's a real problem. I mean, just, you know, having to go to a place and having a small window to do it on a Tuesday. Why Tuesdays?
And why is it not a holiday? A lot of people talking about this, making it out. Let's not get into solutions yet, because we've got
a whole section on
A whole section on solutions. Sure. Do you want to talk more about time now, or should we go to security?
Let's go to security.
We've kind of bled into that.
Right. And we already covered security a little bit at a top line, but let's dive into it in a little bit more detail. And the bullet that I have here is, security a real or an imagined threat? I do think it's a real threat. I don't think it's a real threat in the way that that some people perceive it, though. There's a lot of evidence of people, you know, infiltrating voting polling places on the right.
Yeah.
That is a big problem. And
I know someone who had very an anecdotal experience with this, who they knew like someone in another state, in a swing state, mm-hmm. and they were an election poll worker. Yeah. It wasn't the person I know, it was the person I know knew someone. Mm-hmm. And this person was taking votes from people who said they weren't ballots, who said they were not going to vote, gathering them and then filling them out for their political party and their political interests. And then dropping them in the ballot box. That is voter fraud.
That sounds quite a bit like voter fraud. And so we talked about this story before. And in this situation, this person did this with the blessing of the people who ballots they were submitting.
Yeah, that does not make it voter fraud, less then?
Of voter fraud.
Does it?
Yeah.
Because my wife says I can fill her ballot out. Sometimes I do. Or maybe I don't. I don't know. Am I allowed to say that? I mean, if you agree on things and you're like, yeah, just vote up and down Republican or vote up and down Democrat, is that voter fraud?
What if they don't sign it? What if you sign for them?
That's voter fraud. Well, then, right. Yeah.
How about like electioneering? That's a security issue too, right? Like you're not supposed to be able to stand outside of a polling place and intimidate people, but I think that happens more than
not just intimidating, Joe. You're not even supposed to wear a t-shirt mm-hmm. or hold a sign. Yeah. Like you can't try to sway anybody's vote.
Yeah. Corrupting the voting process is prohibited. I'm reading from the sample ballot that I have in front of me right now. And they go into specifics on this stuff. There's too much to read here, but they do talk about all of that stuff, influencing votes in line, stuff like that.
Yeah, I back to secure. It's really funny because I don't want to sit on my high horse and be one of these elitist coastal jerk holes. Yeah, but it's funny because people are so easily manipulated to think something is a problem and then they rail against it. And what they don't realize is they're being a tool to do the actual things that they're complaining against, like I just said before. And it's like, if you look at like how much voter fraud there's been, I mean, it's like out of millions of ballots, there's like 2
right.
or like 10. Like right. I don't have actual data here, but I mean, just Google it. And you'll see that what we're talking about is yes, and find reputable sources, not like, you know, I'm angry at BillClinton.org, you know, right? Like it look at actual like legit New York Times, Washington Post, wherever you get your news, that's legit. Yeah. So it's not really a problem. I think the bigger problem is the institutional. You know, it's kind of like when people go, it's kind of like this is a totally different topic. When people rail against, oh, these people are cheating the system. And then there's this stereotype of the welfare queen. And then it's really like, yeah, but have you seen white collar crime and how much people are skimming off the top? You know, so when you have governors taking away voting booths and you have a guy in the post office removing, like destroying our postal system, these are problems. These are taking away votes. Like, I forget where it is. They do sold to the polls. And they're trying to take away that time for people to do the early voting. Yeah. Well, that's a whole constituency. Soul of the polls.
I was about to get into that. Souls of the polls. Yeah.
Well, why don't you get into it, Joe? Okay, I don't want to take away what you get into.
I believe what you're talking about is there is a certain areas they have like shuttles to take
African-American churches right after church.
Yes. Souls, S-O-U-L-S, like to the polls, P-O-L-L-S. And, you know, it's a great way to mobilize people to go vote early on a Sunday mm-hmm. at a time that's convenient for them.
Joe, exactly. I didn't get the restrictions on soul of the polls. Can you say that again? And like, are they trying to restrict that from happening?
Well that's what Dave was saying.
Yeah. When you cut out early voting, that's the type of, these are the folks that are, and the important thing about souls of the polls is you have elderly people who don't get around well enough. And this is, and what crushes my heart here is that this is how democracy should be. This is a community coming together going, we're going to do our civic duty. We're going to be a part of this great democracy. Mm-hmm. And we're going to help our neighbors out who maybe don't have the means to get there. And we're going to all go together, right? And then you have a governor or a secretary, or whoever does this, saying, no, we're going to cut that out, the early voting out.
Right.
So now you have to come at between now and like Joe said, you go to work. So everybody floods at that time, 7 to 8 a.m.
Yeah.
And the lines are ridiculous. And then you got to get out of line because you got to make it to work because your life depends on it.
Right.
So it's like that is, to me, voter fraud. Like you're taking away the right of people to vote.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's deliberate, you know. In case it needs to be said, it's not an accident.
Of course it is. And it's like, why are more people not mad about that? Why are you mad about like, oh, a dead person voted? No, no, we didn't.
Sorry.
Mm-hmm. But we're railing. We're going off the topic here. Let's stay on track, guys. Okay. Let's go to voter apathy. We're still talking about user friction in voting.
So, apathy. Yeah, Joe, you kicked this episode off by talking about being apathetic about this entire topic of voting. Voter apathy is real, man.
Yeah, it's right here in the studio.
Voter apathy, voter fatigue.
And why is that? Why do people feel apathetic? Let's just crack this egg open a little bit. Let's not stay here too long. But what do you think, Brad, Joe?
Okay, it's going to be tough to keep this contained, but people don't have trust in the system of democracy that we have right now. I think that's the biggest factor for voter apathy, is like people don't think that their vote's going to count or going to be meaningful.
Even though they've seen so many elections where there's like, this guy won by 2 votes, or that person won by 3,000 votes. Like, I never understand why they still don't think that their vote counts.
So there is purposeful disenfranchisement of voter communities, if that's the right way to put it. Like, it's not, again, by accident that some people feel voter apathy. Sometimes it's targeted.
That's true.
You're
that's
targeting entire segments of, you know, communities, saying that their vote probably isn't going to be meaningful.
Because they vote against you and you'd want them to be apathetic. So it's built in. It's deliberate. Right. Just, Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, because I've got a couple, two or three things on that, actually. It's first off, you know, you get this book in the mail and it's 65 pages of propositions and and judges and you know, everybody's stance and stuff, and you almost get overwhelmed. And then we do this every year. It's like, I don't think there's a year that we don't vote. It's a midterm. Next thing you know, you're gearing up for the generals. Next thing you know, there's an off.
Joe, freedom ain't free. Joe, freedom ain't free.
Sure, but I can see why there'd be fatigue in that. The other thing is the more important thing, though, I think, is we talked about it earlier, and it's that this was never set up to be a direct democracy. It's not one person, one vote counts. We've seen it. It's like if you vote in New York as a Republican, it's almost guaranteed that your vote, quote unquote, doesn't count. It's where we get into like electoral colleges and gerrymandering.
Well, yeah, hold on. Let's pause there.
These districts are cut
off there, Joe, because what you're saying is, I don't think it's clear to everyone, because we have to understand not everybody is as politically inclined as we are. They may be listening. What do you mean there? Well, I think what Joe is saying is, if you're in a clearly Democratic leaning or solid D area, and you're Republican, you feel like, why even vote? Like, it's not going to matter. There's more of them than me. Right. Likewise, if you're in, like, what do they call it here? It's broken down now, but the Orange Wall. No, what do they call it here in Southern California? Where it's all Republican. Yeah, there's a name for it. I forget.
Sort of divide or whatever.
Yeah, there used to be a name for the Republican voting block. So Democrats in that area would feel like, well, what's the point? Well, the point is, now that's a purple area. So same thing could be for you as a Republican in certain areas in New York. But you're right. That's a big deal, Joe, that apathy. And because of gerrymandering, right? Largely.
Well, I mean, we don't have popular votes, you know, as a nation.
Yeah.
So when I cast my vote for the president, truly, it's not going to matter.
That's not true. That's not true. I mean,
okay. All right. That's a terrible thing to say, but you know, like, California is going to lean left.
Right. But if everybody who thought the way you did thought that way,
it would
go red. It's gone red. They voted for Reagan.
You can't not think that way. Like, that is the part of the discipline and the exercise of democracy, is like, you can't let that kind of thinking get into your head. I just said it out loud and I believe it, but I also believe that that is antithetical to democracy.
Yeah.
Not a vote. It doesn't matter. You know, even if your vote is going to ultimately get lost in a sea of blue or red, you got to fucking vote.
I was going to say, and it doesn't change the fact that it is definitely not ever, it never has been set up to be a direct democracy. We vote for electors who vote for the president. And I mean,
mostly,
I think most
propositions,
people,
actually, propositions.
Right.
That's true.
And we complain about that.
And this is what the right does really well, to give them credit, is that they are great at down ballot voting. Is that the right way to say it?
Yeah.
We are bad at it. So we'll turn up for presidential elections, and we'll turn up for the big ones.
Yeah.
But the smaller ones, we do not show up for. We, meaning the left, to be clear.
So voter apathy,
And that is voter apathy. That is like, well, I don't even understand these measures. I don't even understand. I don't know who these judges are.
Judge? What's a judge? Well, that's going to put your ass in jail. You better vote for that guy.
Yeah.
Are you sure you're politically aligned?
and that is what the right has done extremely well, is showing up for those. They don't really care about understanding the judges or not. not. They're going to vote.
Right. They're going to vote for their judges. For the one. Right. And we, when we go to voter guides, I really want to talk about this because the right does voter guides much better than the left. Okay. Let's keep this moving along, guys. Let's talk about understanding the ballot next, because Joe held up this book. And it's funny that you said it, Joe, because I have the same visceral reaction like you had mentioned. It's like it's overwhelming. But at the same time, there's another part of me who likes this. I love more information. I want all the information so I can make a good decision. Like you gave me shit the other day. I was sending you some Twitter stuff and you know, we had a little back and forth, but I'm like, yeah, I liked it. Like this was about a certain political person who's in hot water. And yeah, I like to read the court cases. I don't like to just hear the news about it. I like to get in there and line by line read stuff. And it's cool because the reporters will send it out and then I'll start reading it and I'll try to beat them to the salient points. You know? Right. So I dig that shit. And with this, you would think I would want to, oh, here's a background on analysis by the legislative analyst for Proposition 28. You think I'd love this shit, but it's just too much. And it's like, I also feel overwhelmed by the power of it. Like this is going to affect people's lives. Kidney dialysis. I don't know which way I should vote on that. Like, I don't want to take away the ability for somebody to get kidney dialysis, and I don't want to be tricked into thinking the wrong thing. You know what I mean? So there is that, there's that anxiety too. It's not just voter apathy. There's voter anxiety.
And ambiguity. A lot of these things are phrased in a way to make them intentionally confusing. Like your vote will not take away somebody's right to not get
it's a sales pitch.
Kidney dialysis.
Yeah. Like, is that a double negative?
I don't, if I vote for this,
it's all sales pitch.
Yeah. It is. It's more marketing than it is politics.
So let's understand the ballot. Let's talk about the design. Brad, you received your ballot in the mail. I was hoping, I keep looking over every time you see me run over to the door. I'm like, oh, is that the mailman? I want to get the ballot, but it hasn't come yet. Let's just talk about the design. Let's get into the UX of the ballot. Brad, crack open your ballot.
Okay.
Tell us what you're seeing in real time.
I'm reading this fresh. So I have a 6-page ballot. It does come with a handy I voted sticker, which I will wear after I cast my ballot, probably on election day. So 6 pages. There are 2 U.S. Senate contests on this ballot, one for the regular 6-year term, one for the remainder of the current term, yada, yada, yada. I can vote for both. And what it has is the national election, the senators, and I just choose one of both of these folks. And there's no
How are they listed? Talk about it from a design standpoint. Are the names in alphabetical order? Are they all on the same page? Does it carry on to another page? What are you looking at?
They do appear to be in alphabetical order for the most part. Actually, I can't say that that's accurate across the board.
Okay. Are they by political party?
I couldn't tell you.
Okay.
Is
interesting.
Is that a problem? You know? Is that a design challenge?
Well, let's keep moving and we'll talk about it after.
So I am looking at this in real time. So I'm looking at this blind for our users, right? So I see the city local election for mayor. That's a big one. That's, you know, been in the news for forever. This is a runoff, right? Because they already had this election and it was too close. And now it's on the ballot again.
Don't know.
Am I making that up? I think that's
right. I don't know. Maybe.
So we have Karen Bass and Rick Caruso. And I know who I'm going to be voting for.
Oh, right.
It says just names. It does not have political parties. It has just names. And we should talk about that. Here's what it says, just verbatim. Karen Ruth Bass, member of Congress. End of description.
Okay.
Rick J. Caruso, businessman, nonprofit leader. End of description.
Okay.
So and even that terminology, nonprofit leader, that actually doesn't mean anything.
Yeah. That's chosen leader. By them. That's chosen by them.
Right. Right. For
of course
sure.
It is.
Yeah. So nonprofit leader. Okay. If I don't know anything about these people, I've got a congressman, congresswoman, and then I've got a nonprofit leader.
Right. Ooh, well, you're leaving out businessman.
Great.
You're leaving out businessman.
Right. Sure. Sure. So without getting into how I'm going to cast my ballot, which you can all guess.
Yeah.
Like, this is not clear. If
you
you're coming to this blind, if you don't know anything about it.
You seem like a nonprofit kind of guy.
I could describe myself as a nonprofit leader. That's what I'm meaning. And I am not a nonprofit leader, but it means nothing.
Yeah.
I've led nonprofit efforts. Sure, I'm a nonprofit leader.
Right.
Doesn't mean anything.
Yeah. Right.
Well, neither does businessman, frankly. I could say that I'm a businessman.
I think the idea from a marketing standpoint, writing that is, I am a businessman, so I know how to run shit. And also I have a heart. That's what it means. That's what that statement means, Brad.
Right. I'm a businessman with a heart. That is brilliant.
And I am not
and, and,
a political person. I'm not a politician.
So there is so much that is communicated with businessman slash nonprofit leader.
Yeah.
And let us be very clear that this is craftily paid for by Rick Caruso to come up with such a brilliant description of three words.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? It's, hey man, people make their,
it could have said Rick
stuff.
J. Caruso, I own a bunch of malls.
I would vote for him if that was it. Rick Caruso, I shouldn't even be here today.
Well, okay, there you go. I think that's a great example of like the language of this and how.
And their political parties aren't there. That's weird.
Political parties are not
there. I thought they usually list it. Look at the senators. Does it, for Senate, does it have the political affiliation?
Yes, it does.
Interesting. Okay. Okay. I wonder if they chose to do that or if that's standard. Mm-hmm. Okay. So you're looking at that. Does it seem clean to you? Does it seem clear? Is there any?
Okay. Let me break it down away from the words on the page and away from any like misleading or, you know, leading language. It is clear from my perspective that I am meant to mark one of these candidates, you know?
Yeah.
Just to take it all the way back, you know, it has instructions on the left. Fill in the circle. Don't check the circle. Don't X the circle. Fill it in.
Yeah.
And you can write in a candidate if you want for certain ones. But it's clear to me what I'm supposed to do.
Okay. Okay. Is it easy to find your candidate? Because I found sometimes when there's a lot of candidates, like it's a sea of candidates. I'm just trying to find the person that I'm looking for.
On page one, there are a max of three candidates per.
Okay. Yes, a general election, probably easier in a general.
Per measure. So in page two, page three, it's like three. So for me, it's pretty damn clear.
And there's no information in the ballot. It's all just make your selection.
That is true. So I do have my sample ballot here. I'm holding it up for the camera.
Right. We see it.
I do have my sample ballot, and that does go into great detail on what the measures are.
It, okay.
Like, has the full copy of the measures.
And Brad, you know what's great about that? As you told us, you got this sample ballot weeks ago, and you had so much time to digest the information to make a decision now that you got your ballot, right?
Okay. No, you're joking. You're setting me up here. So what I was saying before we started recording is I got the sample ballot 2 days ago. And I got the official ballot yesterday. So what was I supposed to do with this sample ballot? You know, like now there is more information in here on the candidate statements and measures and stuff like that. But
less information than the general election official voter information guide?
Yes. Which I don't even know if I received. Maybe I did and don't have it anymore. But that's what you guys have. And that's the 60-page booklet that Joe referenced. There's something else of interest on the sample ballot that I wanted to call out. So right on the front, it says general election November 8th. But then below that, it says voting centers open October 29th through November 7th, 10 a.m. through 7 p.m.
Right.
So I can go and early vote very easily here in California, in Los Angeles. Yeah. This is a Los Angeles specific ballot. And then on election day, it has the poll hours as well, 7 a.m. through 8 p.m. So being a resident of Los Angeles, I can vote easily. I do not think that that's across the board.
What did you say before? It's inconsistent. There are places they don't have early voting at all. Mm-hmm. And it's just, to me, that's a crime. But I don't. We've gone off on so many tangents here. Let's
Keep on going.
Stay on the ballot because we're going to talk about how you would design a better ballot. But before we get to that, okay, we're almost into solutions. So should we talk about how a design? Because I have an article up here from the Brennan Center that I could jump into about common ballot design flaws and how to fix them.
I would love to do that. But we also have voter guides. And I know that you had something to say about voter guides. Did we cover that already?
Yeah. So let's talk. Okay. I will mention voting guides briefly because I'm a big fan. Mm-hmm. And this is a Band-Aid. Like if we're going to talk about solutions, these are Band-Aids. Mm-hmm. Okay. So the ballot info statements that we talked about that are more marketing language, that could help you make a decision. So that's a Band-Aid if you read them. But I don't because I can't see through them.
Yeah.
Voter guides, if you tend to, and this isn't going to work if you are down the line, one of these fantasy middle of the line people that I don't really believe exists. I know we joke.
True independent.
I know we joke that producer Joe is somehow there, but I don't know that that's true because he always votes with us. But
we don't know that
they're mythical creatures, aren't they? it's true. We do not know that.
We don't know what happens once he actually sends that ballot through.
But so I mean, I tend to vote the same way every time, and I try to challenge myself. But
yeah, me too.
I know that if you are like me and you've done your research, you're pretty much going to vote the way I always vote. So that's what a voter guide is. You take these people who do this for a living, who actually have what we don't have, who have time, right? They have this currency called time that we do not have.
Right.
And they have made, you know, they're like, basically they filled them out. And you look at them, you're like, okay, boom, check, 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 check. And I've done that probably the past four elections, four or five elections, because I used to really read these information guides and do a lot of research. And then I checked the voter guides and they always aligned. So what I do now, so I don't feel like I'm just being like blindly voting down the ballot, is I will look at a couple different voter guides and where they disagree is where I'll do my research. So that to me is like, oh, there is within my own kind of political ideology, there's disagreement on this topic. That's where my opinion comes in.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I like these, and I have a list of ones for the Democratic side, and somebody was supposed to do conservative, but I don't think anyone did. It's like pulling teeth for you guys, huh? So I have Courage California, formerly known as the Courage Campaign, CA Dem, LA County Democratic Party. The list goes on and on. What I found with progressive voter guides is they're almost there. They're like, if I click on Courage Campaign, right?
Okay.
Like what I think you should do is right away jump into the guide. Right.
Okay. But
while I'm looking at this and doing this in real time, progressive voter guides, return your ballot by Tuesday, November 8th. Cool. Okay. Where's the guide? I've got to make another click to find it. Oh, right at the top, downloadable voter guides. Why do I want to download it? I'm on my phone. Can I just, like, I don't want a PDF. Okay. Los Angeles County, let's say. I open it up. It's indeed a PDF. Jesus Christmas, Jiminy Crickets. Why? Okay, it's pretty clear. It's laid out pretty clear as a PDF.
Is it a mobile-friendly PDF?
I'm not actually. Oh, okay. Sorry, I was saying use case. You're on your phone. That sucks.
But typically, you're downloading if it's a PDF that you're trying to read on a mobile device, that's not going to be a good experience.
It's not a good experience. Although Adobe has gotten good. I don't know if you've seen this Fluid thing they do now. So they automatically adopt to your phone and they make it a better user experience. Congressional races, by your district, statewide officers. This is really good, state senate. But here's the thing, guys, which all of these fail. Okay, we got county races. It always, the hardest stuff is the stuff I'm not going to know about no matter how much research I do. It's the freaking judges, right? And it's like the comptroller and the like water person. It's like, I don't, there's no way I can know this information. I mean, I can, but it's going to take a lot of effort on my part.
Right.
Tell me, because I want somebody who has my ideological opinions in my community doing the things they do. And it's always missing from these. I don't see it here.
Right. So are you on a conservative one?
No, I'm not. But I think the conservative ones do this.
Thank you. That preempts my point, right?
Yes.
Like, the conservative movement does this extremely well. And you know, this is why we're getting trounced.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Because they're voting down below. They're voting for these judges and they know what they're doing and we don't. They know what they're doing and we don't. Full stop.
I mean, but we're almost there. We're almost there. But the thing that I've always had a problem with is the local races matter. And we're seeing that a lot with exactly what we're talking about. Vote it. Like they're putting these weirdos. Let's get out of political ideology.
Yeah.
They're putting these conspiracy theory weirdos into places they don't belong, like making decisions about millions of people's voting abilities. And when you allow that to happen, it's disastrous. So we absolutely need to do that. And I think there's a lot. I should give them credit. There's a lot more information here. There's state treasurers on here, city council, city attorney, city controller. But there's no judges. Judges are important. But here's how I'd fix it. Okay. Here's how I'd fix this. And this is what drives me nuts, guys, that no one's done this. I often have these ideas and I'm like, somebody's going to do that. I don't want to go through the process of getting venture capital money, you know, hiring designers. But I'm like, okay,
are you going to say that you came up with the Matrix, the idea for the Matrix?
I did come up with the idea for the Matrix, God damn it. I did, Brad, and you're not going to take it away from me. I have a little piece of paper where I drew it with people hanging from VR things in a cave. Anyway, as probably everybody who read Plato's The Cave did during that time. But listen, and maybe we can do this as a business, guys, unless somebody steals it who's listening. You again, a killer app. You take it, you put in your address, you put in your zip code, and then you put in your political ideology. And then you can, it starts simple, right? So if you're lazy, it's the morning of, you haven't done your research, you can get all your damn answers all the way down to the judges. Click, 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 click. But if you have a little bit more time and you care and you want to dive in, you can expand it out, right? Like there'll be a little eye with a circle, you know, for information. You click it and it says, oh, here's what the Courage campaign thinks. Here's what CA Progressives think. Here's the LA Times. Here, and you know what I mean? It's like, here's where they disagree. Click on it. Why do they disagree? And then it becomes an experience.
Well,
it's like a learning app. What these things need to be is a learning app. It needs to be something. And you could start as a political party. Like, I think the Democrats should do this. I think Republicans should do their own. But ultimately, it would be nice if you had one app to rule them all and you could get all this information. I think taking the information and making it bite-sized, but also allow it to expand out with links to articles and links to opinions and blah, 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 and websites. I think that's the key. So you start small. It's collapsed, right? What do we call this? Accordion style, right?
Okay.
And you have the basics. And then you can just copy off that if you want, or you could expand it out and get more information. I think that's key. PDF on my phone, not great. It's good to have, but not great.
Well, yep. I don't know. I think that exists. And I think that part of the problem is that we're conflating a couple things. This is probably mea culpa here. I'm conflating voter guides and voter endorsements. So, for example, the LA Times has a voter guide, which I'm going through in real time, and it's very similar to what you described, Dave.
Yes,
I'm putting in my address, and it's pulling everything out. And then it's not giving me their recommendations on this view. This is the LA Times. They're comparing the candidates, so I can click a button that says compare, and then it kind of like talks about their talking points. At no point in this experience is it yet giving me like the LA Times endorsement. That's a different thing. That's the LA Times endorsement guide.
Oh, you're
which
right.
Is not okay. A voter guide.
Understood. Yep.
So how I'm making my decisions is I'm looking at the LA Times endorsement guide often.
Right. Okay. You're right, Brad. I should call. So the one I was reading from, I think it was Courage Campaign, they call it a voter guide. So they do. It's not just me conflating these things. The political parties conflate them too. So you're right. There is also voter information guides.
Yeah.
This voter guide is a voter endorsement guide. Yes. And that's exactly right. That's explicitly what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
I looked on the App Store for voter. I put Democratic voter guide. Yeah. I've got ActiVote, voting in politics. I don't know what that is. Yeah. You guys can keep talking. I'll install it. Sure. But I don't think this app exists. Like when you go through this process, it still is very much a research process, which I think turns voters off. Nobody wants to go to school to vote, right? I mean, you need to. It's a participatory democracy. And yeah, doing things like we do, making phone calls and reading the news and getting engaged is the answer. But not everybody has time for that. Even we don't have time for that. So these things in a pinch are super awesome to have. And I don't think anybody does it well. So all of our users listening –
I like this idea. Like, wouldn't it be great if it tracked your votes over time? Like, you know, you can go through it, you can engage with it, you can learn, sure, but you can also engage and interact with it and click who you're going to be supporting.
Yeah, I think this ActiVote's on the right path.
And then you could learn and it can start to like provide recommendations even. You know?
That's what it looks like it's doing, Brad. It says, take the political quiz or prepare for my upcoming election. I'm going to report back on this. I'm not going to like sign up for it and do all this on the air, I will next episode in our banter, I will let you know I'm going to take the political quiz.
What I'm interested in is how granular it gets on a local level, you know?
Yeah, like, same here. And because that's where it always breaks down. Right. We've gotten really long on this and it's all my fault.
Luckily, you're the editor.
Well, this might have to be the holy grail that Joe's looking for, a two-parter.
All right. Well, solutions. You've already kind of tiptoed into some solutions into the way.
Well, no, Band-Aids first, right?
Oh, Band-Aids? Okay, sure.
Hey, users. It's your audio editor / host, Dave. We are going to have to make this the Holy Grail. We're going to cut this one short. We're just coming in under an hour because we want you to enjoy it. You know, nobody wants to listen to an hour worth of us talking. And also, more importantly, I have work in the morning. I have a day job, okay? And it's midnight the night before. I want you guys to hear this. But don't worry. We're not going to make you wait an entire week. Nope. I'm going to get this into your earbuds by Sunday night, Monday morning before you vote. And stay tuned because we got Band-Aids. We've got solutions. And we got a extra awesome interview. So listen to that. Stay tuned. We'll get you to that Monday. And until then, you know, as Mr. Bradley says, have a, what does he say? I'm on this podcast, 30 episodes. I don't even know what the lines are. You know, he's Mr. Radio host voice, right? Like, health, wealth, and good experiences. Bye-bye. I don't know what he says. I don't know how to shut this down. I know I probably should put the tequila down. Maybe. It's late. Good night, y'all. Good experiences or something. Come on, Dave. We're wishing you health, well-designed wealth. No. Wishing you health, good experience. Wishing you health, wealth. He doesn't say wealth. Where are you getting wealth from? You want wealth. Maybe you need wealth. Okay. Wishing you health. Fuck. I don't know what he says.